And so it goes. You're a douche, you're a douche, you're a big fizzy douche.
I am your host, Kristen Bry. Jane Matinere, that was a bold choice. Did you say that there's over a dozen songs about douches?
You would be amazed.
This was the best one?
It was the most upbeat, I think.
Happy that you were on the live stream so I could see your reaction to our intro song. Because I think it took you by the surprise.
Did not expect that. Didn't know that there was that much content around. Also a word that I'm not fully comfortable saying out loud, but that I'm glad we have it in song. That's perfect.
Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time. This is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Wisconsin. Welcome to the noon hour, the lunch hour of As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. We are here with Jane Matinere and Mr. Greg Bach because it's Wednesday, our Wednesday co-host. And for this hour, we have some great conversations, some great guests. At the bottom of the hour, we are going to talk about a bill from an unexpected source about public records that I would say is a good thing, and we want to give credit when credit is due.
Definitely.
And then we're going to wrap up the hour talking about some of the Wisconsin organizations that are sending help to Syria and Turkey, and also list some ways that you can help if you would like to do what you can for such an unbelievable tragedy that is happening over there. But to start off, for the first half hour, this was probably a month ago when we talked, you and I, Jane, tried to wrap our heads around
This story,
yeah. Because there's so much here. So this is another story coming from Wisconsin Watch that is a combination of paper mills, which, you know, there's so many empty paper mills scattered across the state on top of also manufacturing buildings that are, people are, what do we do with these? But it's also a story about a town and what they do when the main economic source is hollowed out. It's also a conversation around Bitcoin and the mining operations that go into it. And it's also a conversation about migrant workers and immigration. And so here to talk about this story and how they went about reporting it is Jacob Resnick, who is an Oshkosh-based investigative reporter with Wisconsin Watch, and Zen Wang, who joined Wisconsin Watch as a Fund for Investigative Journalism Fellow in January of 2023. So this must have been one of her first stories. Welcome to As Goes Wisconsin, you two.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
And thanks for having us.
Yeah, absolutely. So this story is pretty winding. So I think as I tried to set it up in all the different pieces that it covers, I think let's just start with how did either of you or one of you find this story and start pulling on the thread?
I'll try to take this one. This story started as most best stories do with a tip. A very strange email appeared on November 28th last year, and the subject line was a paper mill worker's plea for help. And as I started reading it, I was like, what is this? Because it was obviously gone through machine translation, like Google Translate or something like this. And it just said, "Hello, sir. You know, we're employees of FDLLC SOS. We work for the Park Falls paper mill." And it went on to talk about how they had been working for this cryptocurrency company in their rural Wisconsin, and that they're from China, and that they had been injured, and that the working conditions were really, really bad. And when they started to point this out, they were abruptly fired. They were stuck in a place where they don't speak the language, and they hadn't been paid for the last month. And they said, they kind of closed by saying, "I hope the U.S. government will help the vulnerable groups get back what we deserve. The pay, thank you, God bless America." And then it said, "You know, please text me because my English is limited, thank you." And I was like, what is this? Because I, you know, it had been reported that there had been a cryptocurrency operation up in Park Falls, Wisconsin, which is very far north. And I forget how to describe where it is. It's like,
it's Price County. So it's
It's Price County. Very small town, kind of Eau Claire-ish, we'll say. So I got in touch with them, And there's like, we can't really speak English much. And then we remembered we had Jen just come on staff and she speaks fluent Mandarin. And so she came on the team and we started working together to figure out who these people were, how they got to Wisconsin, you know, were they credible? What was the situation? And what was this company that they're working for that actually had a very interesting past as well? And we can get into that in a bit. So that's how the story started.
That's how the story started. And that's also how the written story starts with these two gentlemen who've basically got stuck after they got fired from this company. So I guess enter SOS Limited.
Right.
And it's crazy to me because I feel like 2022 was the year of like cryptocurrency hype and 2023 is its downfall because the amount of stories. We were just joking about the Super Bowl and how we didn't see a single commercial on Sunday with cryptocurrency. But it's also stories like this where companies that, let's just say, are being investigated already as far as how they are running their company. So tell us more about SOS Limited.
Right. Well, you know, as you said, there's been a lot of hype over like 5-10 years about cryptocurrencies, especially, you know, as digital currencies like Bitcoin have just been exploding in value exponentially. There's been this push to bring cryptocurrencies to the retail consumer, you know, like with ATMs and things like that, where you can like, you know, get Bitcoin. So it went from this kind of thing where, you know, very niche kind of tech or investor kind of people would buy into it, where, you know, retail investors, people who just have a little bit of money to put here and there, started buying into Bitcoin. And then on top of that, there's been a number of companies that did public stock offerings saying, hey, we're actually going to create these digital currencies. And the thing with digital currencies is they basically do mathematics to create value out of thin air. But it's not just thin air. They have to use so much computing power. It's really, really energy intensive. Mm-hmm. You literally have racks and racks of computers doing these very, very complicated calculations. And they're racing other computers to do the same thing. And whoever gets to the end of the math problem first adds a link on the blockchain and creates value of Bitcoin. And that's how they make this intrinsic value. So they pour in all this. And the thing is, if you don't win, if you come in second, all that energy you've put into the process, it's all for naught.
Oh,
it's just all, yeah, it's just nothing. So it's pretty wasteful, actually, arguably. So that's why there are costs. It's not like you're just making money out of thin air. So there's these companies that are saying, look, we're going to get, you know, ahead of the curve. We're gonna invest in these high power computers. We're gonna make Bitcoin, and they've been courting investors. And SOS Limited is just one of them. It's a Chinese company. Well, Cayman Islands, you know, but most of its executives are in China, and its origins are, it used to be a micro-lending company in China. It's been around for I think about a decade. Anyway, they ended up raising about $600 million from mostly like retail investors.
Wow.
You know, people putting in, okay, cashing out their 401ks, putting 10 grand, 20 grand. And it had this meteoric rise. And then all of a sudden, people started to realize, wait a second, they're hoovering up lots of money, but are they actually doing anything on the ground? And there's been lots of questions. They had a pretty spectacular fall. And so there's been lots and lots of people who have lost their life savings and trying to figure out where'd my money go.
Jacob, we're talking to Wisconsin Watch reporters Jacob Resnick and Zen Wang about a former paper mill in Park Falls converted into a Bitcoin mining operation and what a mess this has apparently become.
Right. And so a lot of these investors, and a lot of them are in North America, but there's some in Europe, there's all over the world, have been trying to figure out, you know, where my money go, and there's been just almost no information, except right up in a local newspaper in Price County, when they actually started their first North American operation, a very small operation in a former paper mill. And all of a sudden, all these investors are like, whoa, wait, where's Price County? You know, where's Park Falls, Wisconsin? And you've all these people on these online forums posting, sharing information from the local newspaper. Oh, look, they're actually finally making some Bitcoin, and a little glimmer of hope. And in fact, yes, they did. They imported some skilled laborers, our skilled workers, tech workers, these two guys from China that we were talking to, had come in and started setting things up. But it became apparent real quickly that this company was more about raising money from shareholders than actually doing anything on the ground. And they became pretty disenchanted and disillusioned when just basic health and safety kinds of things were being overlooked. And that's when it became the problem with them. And that's when they came to us.
And so how many, and we have, I want to, if we have to continue after the break, because the paper mill had been closed since 2006 was when the owner had sold it. Or what was the timeline as far as this paper mill even being an option for a company like this?
It was quite, no, that's, this is interesting. It was actually quite recent. It did sell in 2006 with like a longtime owner. And then it had another string of owners, and including one who was this Chinese American businessman from New Jersey, had opened up and tried to run it up until I think it was late 2019. And then it closed for good. And then went to a liquidator. That's what happened.
Okay.
And what we found in our reporting is this guy who had run it for about a year and a half with city support, he came back as a tenant to be kind of the front man for this SOS and start the cryptocurrency mine. So he couldn't run it as a paper mill. And then he came back and as a tenant started this cryptocurrency thing. And the guy has a whole long history. And that this is what had really boded very poorly for the town.
Yeah. And that is where we're going to come back to after the, on the other side of the break, as far as the town's reaction to this and how, what the fallout has been, but also I think where, you know, what is a better solution? Because I think on one hand, besides how wasteful it does seem, that was, your story was not the first time it was thrown out to me. It was like, oh, some of these old paper mills, because my parents live in Wisconsin Rapids, which also has an empty paper mill right now. Oh, we could do Bitcoin mining. And so it's like actually talking about, is that a viable option? And this was just a bad company, or in general, is that just a bad idea? So we will talk about that after the break. Our guests are Zhen Wang and Jacob Resnick from Wisconsin Watch. Stay with us. This is Ask Goes Wisconsin.
I hope when I'm gone and the ages shall roll, my body will blacken and turn into coal. Then I'll look from the door of my heavenly home, and I'll pity the miner digging my bones, where it's dark as a dungeon, damp as the dew, where the danger is double and the pleasures are few, where the rain never falls and the sun never shines. Well, it's dark as a dungeon way down in the mine.
You are listening to As Goes Wisconsin, a product of Civic Media. Enjoy it live across Wisconsin, Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. until 2 p.m. Find your local station on our website, civicmedia.us, or on the Civic Media app, and catch any of your favorite shows as a podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. We got Jane Matinere and Greg Bach, and we are talking to Wisconsin Watch investigative reporters Jacob Resnick and Zhen Wang. And Zhen, you've been on the phone, and so this scene, when you only joined Wisconsin Watch in January 2023, and so what was this? This was obviously your first story, and so what was it like to have this fall in to your lap and start to dig in right away? Mm-hmm.
Oh, thanks for the question. Because when Jacob approached me last December, I was actually wrapping up my graduate program at UW-Madison. But I've been interning with Wisconsin Watch for a while, so I'm not brand new for the center. But this story, you know, aroused my attention or also interest, curiosity, because not only I can speak the language the two migrant workers speak, but also, you know, how did the two Chinese nationals end up in Wisconsin, Park Falls? That's, you know, where my curiosity lies, where, you know, what kind of visa, you know, their own. It's lots of questions on immigration. So that's why, you know, that's where I joined Jacob, teamed up with him, and started reporting for the story.
And what, I mean, that's actually a good follow-up question, is what were the visas? Because it wasn't a traditional work visa, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good one. That's a good question. So the first question I asked them is that what kind of, because I was having the same question, and they said, the two migrant workers said they came to the United States on a temporary business visa, which means that the visa is not allowed them to work in the United States. But what they can do is to visit the site, the mining site, and do some training, but they cannot be paid by the company based in the United States. That's what the immigration laws say.
Oh, wow. And so I guess this could be for either of you. Where, since the story was published, where does the story sit now, as far as is SOS Limited still employing anyone? Is there any power that this city has, the town has, to try to get them out of the paper mill?
Well, the city didn't want the cryptocurrency really in the first place, and the reason for that was it went from, you know, a very productive economic anchor of a paper mill, which has hundreds of employees, to this high energy operation that at most might have a dozen people working. But, you know, it's zoned industrial. They didn't need any special permits, so they didn't have any actual power to prevent it. But people weren't too happy about losing their paper mill and just getting something that was so niche and not really employing anyone. And they were doubly disturbed when they found out that they were bringing in people from another country and not treating them well and not paying them. So the thing is, as it stands now, as far as we know, it's still functioning. It seems like there's been a pivot from SOS. They're trying to do some of their production in Texas. Because you had asked earlier about, you know, what makes for a good cryptocurrency site. And it's not just, you know, a big empty building. The main crux of all of this is cheap power. And paper mills are often good places because, you know, they built paper mills where there was usually hydropower and, you know, a good surplus electricity. We never got this 100% nailed down, but the former owner of the paper mill, who is now like the lead tenant doing the cryptocurrency, we were told from some people who work for the city that there were still some outstanding bills to one of the power providers. So they weren't able to really harness that cheap power so much. They were just buying it off the grid, which is, you know, mixed portfolio, a little bit of everything. So they weren't getting super cheap power. So that was kind of an economic problem. There is another cryptocurrency operation in Wisconsin that does use, I think, 100% hydropower. Or actually, they might have a little bit of wind mixed in there, but it's sustainable and it's relatively inexpensive. And that would be the kind of thing that if you were to have crypto mining in Wisconsin, you'd have to find a place where they had surplus, relatively inexpensive, sustainable power.
Yeah, they may want to be careful tapping into that Texas power grid. I'm just throwing that.
Well, right, exactly. Well, in Texas, the power is inexpensive because they're coming off of gas fields. So they're taking over its former natural gas facility down in Pecos County. And that's why Texas has been able to lure so many crypto mining operations, because they have all this energy from fossil fuels.
So I guess as far as a takeaway, because we have to wrap up, I think it was described in the article as a cautionary tale. And so is this something that it's not just a bad actor, as in SOS Limited, it is also a bad idea as far as potentially taking old paper mills and trying to convert them into Bitcoin mining operations, even with the best actors behind the company?
Well, I'm going to try to be diplomatic. I mean, even with the best actors, you still have the idea that you're using a lot of power, a lot of electricity, you know. And if you have all this great surplus hydropower, great. But, you know, arguably there might be some more better functions use of that power. It's never going to be there. It's never going to employ that many people. I mean, you have some startup operations, getting the racks of computers and stuff. And then once it's running, you know, you just have, you know, at most a few dozen people who are maintaining and running it. And then you have the volatility of the cryptocurrency market. I mean, we have all seen what's happened to the Bitcoin, how value it's dropped. And so it's not really a very sure bet. I mean, I think that there definitely is some validity to having cryptocurrency as a thing, whether it's Bitcoin or not. I don't know. There are alternative models where we talked about earlier where you've got computers who are racing each other to do the math first, and what the computers that get the math first get the money. The second place wastes all that energy. There are others that where all that energy is used towards value, and there could be something good to that.
All right. Well, this was so fascinating. We will link the article to our show notes today because I highly recommend reading it. Thank you for reporting on this, Jacob and Jen. Thank you for joining us today, and keep up the good work. We'll talk to you soon. This is the day of tomorrow. Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin. I am your host, Kristen Bry. Jane Madner, as always, picking very perfect songs.
Why, thank you.
For our bumper music that is tied to the subject at hand. And of course, since it's Wednesday, Mr. Greg Bach sitting directly across from me. How are you feeling, Ben?
I'm feeling good. I'm on coffee number three.
Well, let's hope that doesn't speed up, because often when you and I are together, people, we start talking fast. Yes. And so hopefully your coffee will help us look at each other and slow down.
Now we're just staring at each other.
All right. So I saw this information, an article break yesterday. And it's always, you know, talking about the bills that get proposed in Madison by our lawmakers. Sometimes they get a hearing. Sometimes they get out of committee, sometimes they get passed, and sometimes they get signed into law or vetoed. But often we talk about the bills that seem like a bad idea and then get legs, and then somehow, at least in this this administration in the governor's office, vetoed a lot. But this is one, and I want to give credit when credit is due. When it comes from politicians that you don't always agree with, doesn't mean that they don't sometimes do things that you do agree with.
That was so diplomatic, that whole run-up. Just
another way to put it is, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while.
And there's Jane distilling it down to that rageful love. I just love it.
So I should give some background here on this particular lawmaker, Wisconsin State Senator Dewey Strobel, who yesterday I had referenced that one of my proudest moments as far as being, I don't think of myself as an agitator, but you know, every once in a while I say my truth and some people don't like it. And one of my prouder moments that we talked about yesterday was when founder and president of Wisconsin Institute for Law and Liberty wrote an op-ed in response to my TikTok video.
They didn't like it.
Did not like
no.
it.
No.
You know what? You're not a spanner in the works. You're a sand in the shoe. You don't notice until you're like, I gotta take my sock off.
But the other proudest moment came last spring when the final redistricting maps for Wisconsin were decided. After they had made it to the United States Supreme Court, where Evers' maps had been accepted because they had the least amount of change, which was the original criteria presented by the Wisconsin Supreme, the Wisconsin Supreme Court had agreed on, and Governor Evers stuck to that, had the maps that were slightly better than the maps we had had the 10 years prior. and still managed to have the least amount of change. And so the Wisconsin Supreme Court said, this is the maps that we pick. That got appealed to the United States Supreme Court, where it said, yes, this is a racial gerrymander. It had to go back. And because we were running out of time, there was no possibility to put new maps in. And so the Wisconsin Supreme Court then picked the even worse gerrymandered GOP maps. And I took to Twitter in what Bill Glauber, reporter for Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, told me the following Monday. You were a little emotional. Yeah, you kind of, yeah, you showed your hand a little. Because I was upset. It's an issue that I care about a lot.
Yeah.
And I was upset. And I said something along the lines of, how long and how many bad laws will be passed when people like me who left and came back, or people who just move entirely, people like me who left and moved back regret moving back to Wisconsin. It was something along those lines. And it started getting a little bit of traction. And lo and behold, State Senator Dewey Strobel had quote tweeted that and said, I already regret that you moved back to Wisconsin.
Isn't that nice?
Which is not how you can, that's not the correct way to use that word. You can't regret something other people do.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just saying. Just saying.
Well, it's also coming from a person who uses the name Dewey. I mean,
And my response to him was, this is not the burn you think it is.
Nicely done.
But that is a long story to get to the story that we're going to talk about, which is I am now giving credit to Senator Strobel in that he and Todd Novak, have also a Republican, have proposed a bill that is going to strengthen our public records law after last year, the Supreme Court, Wisconsin Supreme Court ruling that some had said was basically like a pierce through the heart of the spirit of what our public records law is supposed to do. And so I think this is something even Bill Luters has said this should get, like, there's no reason that this bill, looking at it, shouldn't get bipartisan support. And he went on record saying, the Wisconsin Supreme Court overstepped in its ruling on the Friends of Frame Park case, and this bill will fix the problem it created. It's as simple as that. And so it should be interesting to see if this can get some bipartisan support.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. I do find it fascinating because Dewey Strobel is a Republican.
Oh, yes.
And let's not forget that in 2015, the same day that Governor Walker announced his run for president, the Wisconsin GOP proposed a virtual gutting of Wisconsin's open records laws in a last-minute anonymous budget motion the Friday night of a holiday weekend.
And that was a secret. Like, no one ever...
It was anonymous.
It was anonymous. It was never penned by anyone who wanted to claim that.
It just showed up, Kristen, like all these bills do, and no one has to sign them.
Which is then interesting because... Yes, both State Senator Dewey Strobel and Representative Todd Novak, both Republicans, and are the authors of this bill. So it is interesting to think of who was, because it was anonymous, who was interested in gutting the public record, open public records law then. But that didn't end up happening.
It didn't, but only because some really eagle-eyed reporter caught it and then got the news, because it was a 4th of July weekend. It could have easily gone unnoticed and passed before anybody even knew what happened. And I am still outraged by the fact that they can author bills and they don't have to sign them. I don't understand how that's the thing. I don't understand why that's legal.
Have you had to deal with, in your time when you've worked for, like, the mayor of Racine, dealt much with what our open record laws are?
Not really, no. Not, I mean, we didn't get... They didn't come through my office often. I mean, they never came through my office because we didn't issue them. The most we ever really had were people who just, you know, thought we were always hiding something, always up to no good. You know, every new development had a grand plan of disaster and murder.
But what I also want to, at least the process, because I think it's a good civics reminder that this is kind of how the process can or should go, where the Wisconsin Supreme Court and the other judiciary branches, like parts of the judiciary branch, have to rule on how they interpret the law. And if they come down with a ruling, it is up to the lawmakers, if they can get enough consensus, to change the law. Mm-hmm. Right? And so this reminds me a little bit of, you know, people were, I remember when this happened last year, and people were very upset that this ended up being the ruling for this case. But it was also the unanimous decision last year with the boyfriend loophole, because it's just a misdemeanor, that people who are domestic abusers, but because of the level of what their charge was, can own a gun. But even the quote-unquote liberal justices on the Wisconsin Supreme Court voted, because they were like, this is what the law says. This is up to lawmakers to change the law. Mm-hmm. And so this, I think, is a prime example of the Supreme Court ruled in one way, and now it is in the hands of the lawmakers to try to get enough votes to change the law. And so hopefully this is something that will move forward and that people can get on board with and protect open records laws.
It would be beyond a travesty if, I mean, just think about the ramifications if we did not have open records laws and the amount of things they could get away with beyond what they're already getting away with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and what this has to deal with more is about getting compensated. So when you are going to law, like going to court, if you end up getting the records that you've requested, being able to be reimbursed,
right?
Because by not being able to do that, you're de facto limiting people's risk. I mean, you're basically amplifying people's risk of even going to court if they feel like they're going to be on the hook for having to pay for lawyer fees, right?
Well, and you get charged per page, don't you?
I imagine
there's a fee.
Administrative cost, yeah, to doing this.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
So there's my tip of the hat. Being a bigger person.
That's so good of you.
You don't always have to, you know, some people who are, you strongly disagree with often, and you have lots of not so nice things to say about their looks, but you chose not to say that because you are a bigger person.
Boy, tall potatoes, you're really proving your point right now. Just, wow.
I'm just saying.
Just saying.
Just saying.
Sometimes people do good things even though they stink like onions.
But it really, especially in this political climate where I think we can tout President Biden's accomplishments and some of the things he's done, the CHIPS Act and, you know, a number of different things where the GOP, for the most part, isn't going to acknowledge that anything that he ever did was any good at all.
Well, no. And that's the thing. I was thinking about that the other day, is that Sarah Huckabee Sanders, Nikki Haley, all these people are saying he's a failure, he's done nothing, nothing's happened. But honestly, if he only serves one term, they will say he had a very rocky start. But then he went on in his second year of his term to just crush it.
They've gotten a lot done.
And they've done it on a bipartisan nature, too. So these people who are saying he's done nothing, you're saying he's done nothing on bills you voted for. So what are you even talking about right now? But I think that, yeah, that's, you know, I thought about that after the State of the Union. I'm like, yeah, he's kind of crushing it right now. And he's, you know, this is his coming out to, like, I want to run again. I'm like, Joe, settle down.
I'm not squarely in the camp of, oh, he should not run again.
Only reason why I don't think he should run is because of his age.
I know
that sounds terrible. And if I was, if I was a Trump supporter, well, first of all, I would have a whole lot of things to answer for. But it's the same thing. Like, I personally, and Jane, I don't know about you, or Chris, I don't know about you, I felt like he had said when he was running, I'm going to run for one term. I felt like he said that somewhere. He had the intention of, because he wanted to get it out of the hands of the current, the last administration, set it on its right course, and then hand it off to somebody else. I thought that's what he said.
I don't think he said that. He may have insinuated something along those lines as far as, I am a transitional figure.
Yeah.
But
But at this point now, like we were saying in the other segment, I mean, unless he says, I'm not running now, here's your person, whether it's Kamala or whomever. Pete? Pete. I don't want Pete.
You don't like Mayor Pete?
I'm not a fan. I he's fine, but he's not the person I want.
Like a silver tongue and how he handles Fox pundits?
He's got to handle the thing in Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
That's what he's got to handle.
I mean, that's, I'll just put it this way. I have personal things about it.
Oh.
There it is.
Oh. And we'll actually that at the break.
And actually has nothing to do with him. But point is, he hasn't set forth a course to hand it off to anybody. Yeah. So, of course, he's going to run again.
All right. When we return, talking a little bit about how you can help Turkey and Syria and highlighting some of the efforts locally in both Milwaukee, Madison, of sending aid over there because, holy moly, I can't even, like, wrap my head around what a tragedy and that has been. This is As Goes Wisconsin. Stay with us.
Stuck in the middle of the sea, I'll sail the world to find you. If you ever find yourself lost in the dark.
Welcome back
see.
To As Goes Wisconsin. I am Kristen Bry. She is Jane Madnair. Greg Bach is sitting across from me because it's Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
Our hump day, favorite day, because you are here, friend.
Oh my God, you're gonna make me tear up.
That's the goal.
Okay.
So speaking of tearing up,
yeah,
we haven't really talked about it much yet as it's been developing and as the count just keeps getting higher and higher of bodies being found and people have dying.
It's over 40,000 now.
Oh, and it's that kind of number that I can't even, I mean, that's Brookfield. That's
bigger than many Wisconsin towns.
That's bigger than many Wisconsin towns, yep. As far as how many people just.
That's like 2/3 the population of Waukesha.
Yep. And, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around as far as, because it was already, I mean, Syria already so many issues and political turmoil and so
civil
many
of the war.
People, civil war and so many people who were already refugees or
displaced had, people?
Yes, displaced people. As far as hearing some of the stories that are coming out of there. And so I thought we would at least address, first highlight some of the groups that have been in Wisconsin that have been doing, trying to send help. And so I think it's pronounced Hyatt Pharmacy in Milwaukee, which is pretty sure Mike and I got one of our boosters there.
Yeah, definitely.
And yep. So yep. They're great. They're super, like, they were so kind when we went in there. They are matching donations to the Syrian American Medical Society up to $50,000.
Wow.
Milwaukee's Muslim Women's Coalition, where nearly half of their board members are of Syrian origin, they are collecting new winter clothes and medical supplies at the Islamic Resource Center in Greenfield because it is winter there.
Yes, it is. And I understand when people visualize the Middle East, you think everything is sand and hot, and that's no. It's a very mountainous, very mountainous countries.
Yes, and so and we will link all of these websites to today's show notes. But then in Madison, in just 26 hours, the Madison Association of Turkish Students at the University of Wisconsin-Madison collected more than 1,000 items, including sleeping bags, tents, diapers, hygienic products, medicine and other supplies, and they are sending items to the Turkish consulate in Chicago, and then that is getting shipped to Turkey. They've also raised more than $8,000 to the nonprofit Turkish Philanthropy Funds. And this, I got these from WPR, which highlighted the work and has some quotes of the different leaders who are trying to organize this. But then I think USA Today also will link this to as well, vetted some of the reputable organizations that you can donate to that are working on this as well, including Turkish Red Crescent, which is a Red Cross affiliate, Syrian Red Crescent, which is a Red Cross affiliate, the White Helmets, which is a humanitarian aid organization that operates in rebel-controlled areas of Syria. There's a Syrian American Medical Society, Doctors Without Borders, International Blue Crescent Relief and Development Foundation. They have a handful more that we'll link all of that today, because I just feel like in hearing those numbers, it's hard for me to even wrap my brain around.
And it is really important to use agencies that have been vetted like that, yeah. Because unfortunately, in the wake of these kinds of tragedies, all kinds of scammers pop up, you know, donate to us and we'll take care of it. So that's a really valuable resource,
and
Kristen.
In the article for USA Today, they also have like charity navigator tips, as far as there's literally a website called Charity Navigator, and it gives tips as far as how to find reputable registered charities, and it gives different ratings and stuff as far as trying to vet organizations so you know where your money is going to. But yeah, the way that the death toll is just climbing every day by the thousands is like gut-wrenching.
It is. And we've seen this with disasters in our own country, that this is going to take years, if not a decade, because the devastation is so severe and so widespread. It's mind-boggling. It is. So anything you can do, truly, it doesn't seem like much if you only give a buck. Enough people give a dollar, that adds up to $500.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. And it's just overwhelming as far as in the face of, especially with Syria. I mean, I think Turkey was a little bit more stable despite their own political issues, yep, as far as who their leader is and the how they're running the show right now, but not the same civil war that's happening in Syria. And so if you had anything you can give, like I said, I will link all of that to today's notes. I will certainly be giving myself, because it's the least you can do right now. I don't know how else you try to wrap your head around it.
Well, and again, the agencies that are listed and we're going to be listing, they have the context. They know how to get this done. Yeah. It's all well and good to, I think sometimes people are very well-meaning and they start collecting items without realizing the logistical issues of getting things to where they need to get to. So,
well, and that was so much of what we saw with Ukraine, right?
Absolutely.
Of a year ago, is all of the fundraisers and different organizations that wanted, that in good faith, wanted to help, but the actual logistics of trying to get supplies, yeah, to a war-torn country, or to a country where the infrastructure is just basically is pebbles and rocks right now, yeah, trying to, at least if you instead of giving items that need to be shipped, being able to give money.
That's what we did at Lakefront. We have our Putin crawler for Ukraine, and we just give $10 from every crawler to an NGO overseas, and they just distribute the money the way they can right there. Cash money is the best way to do it, honestly.
And I don't know what this will do for displaced people, but when we come back after the top of the hour news, we are going to be talking to Adam Van Noord, who is the director of the Multicultural Community Center in Wausau, Wisconsin. And they know a thing or two about resettlement, because in their first year alone, which was just this last month, they were able to resettle over 160 refugees in central Wisconsin. And so we're going to talk to him about what that first year has looked like, maybe explain a little bit more about what that process looks like for people who find themselves in Wisconsin in a brand new country and a brand new culture. And that's going to be where we start the next hour. Stick around. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Supposed to do, oh yeah. Ooh.
Thank you for listening to As Goes Wisconsin, available on Spotify, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. Please subscribe and leave us a rating. As Goes Wisconsin is a product of Civic Media and airs live across Wisconsin Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Civic Media is a statewide network of radio stations broadcasting local news, local sports, thoughtful commentary, and hand-picked music. We are always streaming on the Civic Media app. Find out where you can listen on the air or learn more about Civic Media and sponsorship opportunities by going to our website, civicmedia.us. We thank you for listening.